This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News, and joining me now is Professor Vincent Bonventri from Albany Law School. As we speak, there's just been an announcement of a new package to expand the size of the U.S. Supreme Court from 9 justices to 13. What's your initial reaction to that?
Well, my initial reaction is that there isn't anything magical about having 9 on the court. I mean, it wasn't as though, you know, somebody from on high came down and said, you know, the decisions will be the wisest and the fairest if you just would have 9 justices on the court. And in fact, you know, really, I mean, trying to change the size of the United States Supreme Court is about as American as apple pie. I mean, this was going on at the beginning of the Republic, and, you know, it continued for about the first 100 years. And then, of course, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt tried to change it again. So right now you have a court that seems to be lopsidedly conservative Republican. So, of course, you know, the liberal Democrats don't particularly like it, and they'd like to change the size so they could put more of their own on the court.
How did we get to the magic number of 9, then, if it's not from on high?
Well, at the beginning of the Republic, it was 6. And then what happened was, once Thomas Jefferson beat John Adams for the presidency, well, the Federalists weren't too crazy about Jefferson and the Jeffersonians at all. So they immediately reduced the number. Right? The Federalist Congress immediately reduced the number down from 6 to 5. And then when Jefferson was inaugurated, he and his Congress, they lifted it back up, you know, to 6. And then on and off, it went, you know, 6, 7, 9, 10. And then finally, with Ulysses S. Grant, 1869, the Congress set the number as 9, and we've had that number or stuck with that number ever since. But again, I don't know that anybody really is saying there's some magic to it. I mean, I'm not aware of any social studies that have said, well, 9 is some superb number, and you really get the best balance and the best justice with 9. I've never heard of any such claims.
What happened when FDR tried to expand the size of the court?
Well, it didn't go anywhere. I mean, his administration tried to expand the court because the court had repeatedly struck New Deal legislation. Indeed, not just legislation coming out of the FDR administration, but legislation coming out of the states. Any legislation that had to do with regulating business, that had to do with maximum hours, minimum wages, workplace safety, child labor, anything like that, Social Security, anything like that, the United States Supreme Court would strike it down because of this jurisprudence of laissez-faire. They continually ruled that the Constitution somehow made laissez-faire, totally free market economics, to be a fundamental right and fundamentally protected, and neither the federal government nor the state could change that. Well, after this continued, you know, from the late 1800s up until 1937, where the court just kept invalidating all these laws, federal and state, during this time, Franklin Roosevelt got so frustrated, right? The Democrats got so frustrated. People who were interested in the federal government helping us out of the Depression and taking care of workers, they finally started kicking around this notion of expanding the court. But before that ever happened, one of the justices, Justice Roberts, not the current Chief Justice, but Justice Roberts, he switched his vote. And all of a sudden, he started voting with the more liberal members of the court, who were then the judicial restraintists because they were upholding what Congress and the states would do. He started voting with them to start upholding these maximum hour, minimum wage, worker safety rules. So FDR didn't need to expand the court. Even if he was going to be able to, he didn't get a chance to do it anyway.
Do you see signs that the current Justice Roberts has taken steps to moderate the court, given the fact that the court has tilted to the right in recent years?
I don't think there's any question about that. Anybody who follows the court knows that Roberts has done his best to moderate the court. He's an institutionalist, right? I'm hardly the only one saying that. That's the mantra right now. Roberts, institutionalist. He is, but, you know, even during his confirmation proceedings, it was pretty clear that Roberts was not a lopsided right winger, certainly was not liberal by any stretch, but he wasn't, you know, a blind ideologue. And so in many of the cases that we see now, Roberts is actually voting with the liberals, oftentimes as the author of the majority opinion. And it kind of reminds me of remarks that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor made after she left the court. She said that what happened to her and what happened perhaps to others on the court were that some of the justices were so extreme, and she was speaking of Justices Scalia and Thomas, that they were so extreme that they were actually pushing, repelling some of those like O'Connor a little bit over to the left. And I think there's no doubt whatsoever that that's what's happening to Chief Justice Roberts.
So given the fact that Senator McConnell really held all the power in determining who would join the court in the late stages of the President Obama tenure without allowing Merrick Garland to receive a hearing, he's now the Attorney General. And the Republicans were able to hold that seat open until President Trump came in. And then Trump got multiple appointments, bringing us now to the court alignment the way it is. I'm not too good at math, but 13 would still lead to a lot of potentially 7-6 decisions. Would having 13 justices, even if the Democrats were able to get a few more liberal justices appointed during this Biden term, would it fundamentally change the way the balance is right now?
Well, if the court were to be expanded and the Senate would allow Biden to get through, you know, some more liberal justices, it certainly would. You know, right now, the balance on the court is 6 Republican conservatives, and you have 3 Democratic liberals. Really, what you've got is you've got 3 liberals, and you've got 5 conservatives, and now you have Chief Justice Roberts as the swing vote, really a more moderate centrist. If you add several justices to that, sure, that's going to change the balance of the court. And look, you know, these justices, they could say what they want. The politicians can say what they want at these nomination confirmation proceedings about interpretive methodology. They're not going to make law. They're not going to make policy. I mean, that's just so much balderdash. You know, that's exactly what they do because they can't simply apply the Constitution and resolve the kinds of narrow questions that get to the United States Supreme Court where there really isn't an answer. There's support on both sides. Well, if you start adding some liberal justices to the court, you're going to be adding justices who on social and political matters are going to be more liberal. And in filling the gaps, they're going to fill it with social and politically liberal rulings. So, yeah, it would definitely change rulings at the court.
I think politically it's an uphill climb looking at this bill realistically to expand the court. But what about the slippery slope argument that, you know, if the Democrats use their power to expand it to 13, then the next time the Republicans are in control, you know, they'll expand it another few members and on and on. Is that a realistic worry?
Well, I don't know. I mean, suppose the Democrats, you know, expanded it to 13. I mean, would then the Republicans, what, expand it to 20? I mean, how far are we going to go? I mean, I just don't know how far, you know, the Senate, whether it's liberals or conservatives, Democrats, or Republicans, how much they would tolerate with manipulating the size and the membership of the court. I don't think that's terribly realistic. I think what is realistic is that the Democrats think it was entirely illegitimate, or at the very least, terribly unseemly for the Republicans to do what they did with Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland. And so they consider at least Justice Gorsuch to be an illegitimate nomination and appointment to the court. Now, having said that, I mean, it was certainly within the constitutional authority of the Republicans not to hold a confirmation proceeding with regard to Merrick Garland. But, I mean, they didn't even hold a hearing or have a vote. So you can imagine the Democrats are really disgusted by that. And so I think there's an awful lot of pressure on the Democratic leadership to respond to that, even if it's somehow in kind, and maybe the only in kind they can get right now is to expand the power of the court, the size of the court.
Let me just ask you one more thing. Another reform Sure. that's been talked about in terms of the Supreme Court is not the number of justices, but the lifetime appointment. It's, Yeah. you know, as we are accustomed to now, it's a morbid guessing game about when, you know, someone in their 70s or 80s might Yeah. retire or might die, and that's the only opening. Do you think there's Yeah. merit to the idea of maybe capping the age of judges? Obviously, we've got that in, you know, state courts and other courts.
Well, I don't know about capping the age. I mean, you know, in New York, on our highest court, the age is 70, which I'll tell you is totally moronic. I mean, most of these judges that have been forced to retire because they turned 70, they're actually reaching their stride. They're at their peak at that point in responding to really fundamental questions about a free society, about rights and responsibilities. So I don't think the age, but I think that it would be perfectly fine, and it's certainly an improvement to have a cap on the term. There have been some very serious proposals to limit the term of Supreme Court justices to 18 years and to ensure that there are two vacancies for every presidential term, so that every president or presidential term would have the opportunity to fill two vacancies on the court. And this way, we wouldn't have to worry about, you know, somebody like, you know, President Trump, or, you know, if you're a Republican, somebody like Obama, you know, putting somebody on the court who's very, very young, and they're going to be there for 30 or 40 years. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett is 49 years of age. That means she can be expected, if she remains on the court for the average age of the justices when they retire, she's going to be on the court for, let's see, that's 49, that's 50, that's over 30 years, over 30 years. Is anybody really saying that at the beginning of this republic, the framers are thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, we want them on forever? Well, I don't think that's the case. I think what they wanted was immunity of these justices so that they wouldn't have to be accountable to the pressures of an emotional public. The Supreme Court really was a check on a democracy to make sure that the justices didn't have to worry that they were going to be removed from office because they voted their consciences, they voted the way the law required, and that happened to be unpopular. You could do the exact same thing by having a fixed term of 18 years or whatever, a fixed term, and saying the same thing. You get the justice gets to remain in that fixed term during good behavior. Same thing.
Albany Law School's Vincent Bonventri talking about the U.S. Supreme Court. Always a pleasure to pick your brain about these issues. Thank you so much for taking this time.
Always great to be with you, Ian.